Welcome back once again, Parish of the Patriots, episode 367. As is the norm, I am recording this show on Saturday morning, early Saturday morning. So if the world blows up on Monday or something, and I don't mention it, that's the reason why you're all, most of you regular listeners, you're already aware I usually am recording at least several days beforehand because I got to squeeze it in while I can. Plus, if I were to drop it on the day of, it makes more work for Sven because he's always got a lot on his plate. And this way he's not stuck trying to scramble around and get the show together and up before airtime. So anyway, once again, if something big happens, because we all feel it, y'all feel like something big might be on the way. So yeah, if it doesn't get mentioned, that's the reason why. If you do get something out of the show, don't be shy to pay those ties. I've got the snail mail. That's it. No Bitcoin, no digital currency. Though I don't know how long that's going to remain. They obviously have that cooking in the works. We may get into that a little bit as we go too. But for now, you can address an envelope. You can drop any kind of financial support. Something you want to pitch in the plate. You say, I got something out of it. I feel compelled. You're not going to get any prosperity preaching from yours truly. I'm not going to sit here and tell you, if you give me whatever amount, God is going to give you 10 times back. It's nothing like that. And you get the show for free. If you don't send anything, nothing's going to change from my end. I'm going to keep doing what I do. But if you say, hey, you know, if you said, man, I really have gotten something out of it. I have found it entertaining. I have found it some spiritual information, whatever you think. And you feel moved and compelled and you say, hey, I'd like to pitch something in here. I have a way for you to do that. So, and it is always appreciated. We do have one. We do have one in the listener supporter mailbag. GPD, I would sure hate to be in the U.S. military fighting and dying for this race of people and their antichrist. anti everybody else for that matter. By the way, the Babylonian Talmud is not the Torah in Christ's love. That's from CJ. And yeah, it's exactly right. You know, and it's like we were talking about here recently, you know, this notion that your average Christian believer, at least especially here in the U.S., you know, they you know, the ones that promote the Judeo-Christian thing, they want to promote this belief that, you know, the Jewish religion is fundamentally Old Testament religion. They just never started the New Testament. And that's observably not correct. If you read the Old Testament, it's real quick to figure out it's not correct. If it was the Old Testament, then who are the Levites? You know, the Levites are supposed to be the priest class. So who are the Levites? I never hear any mention of Levites in what they do. There's a lot of different practices and stuff, and they don't do that. Yeah, so you're spot on, and it is very much appreciated, CJ. And for those of you who do drop stuff in, a reminder, because it's been pretty spotty lately, and so I haven't had the chance to remind in a while. I do read the entire thing. I don't always read the entire thing on the show. We got to keep things rolling along, and I like to pick and choose what I put in. That's my prerogative. So, but don't ever think I don't read the whole thing, because I can tell you I 100% certainly do. Now, of course, as always, I got a lot of stuff I want to get into, and in my fairly new what I've been doing recently, formatting of the show, I mix the Christian specific stuff in with the other stuff. It is just all one thing. It flows better, in my opinion. I'm enjoying it doing this way better, which is worth it. It's worth something for me, and that's that. We've got a lot of stuff we're going to wind up wading through, a lot of different topics. It's when I get done and it's time to sit down and figure out what the title of this show is going to be, it's always tough because, as you all know, by the time I get to the end of the show, we've talked about a lot of different things, and most of them, I find them all interesting. I don't talk about stuff that I don't find interesting. So it's like, well, what do I choose to headline the show as? Because again, we talk about lots of stuff and I find all of it interesting. And of course, hopefully you find it all interesting too. And today's no exception. We had a lot of stuff we're going to go, and we might feel like it might feel like we're jumping from one thing to another, but I do always try to view it in a way where it's all interconnected, and probably sometimes that works a little better than others, but that is the goal. So as we go along, just try to remember all of this stuff is connected. Now, I'll just go ahead with this, Rob, back, because I started to mention it earlier before the listener supporter mailbag. And, you know, this digital currency, they're obviously, you know, they're telegraphing this digital currency. This is obviously the move, because the current fiat currency is on its way out. And if nothing else, this war is accelerating, you know, the decline. You know, once the petrodollar status, and most people probably don't really get this, but once the petrodollar status ends, it's over for the dollar. I mean, it really is. I mean, people go on about, you know, oh, the U.S. government is a umpteen, I don't know, I think they're $39 trillion in debt right now. You know, how are we going to pay that back? Well, you're not. And everybody knows you're not. It has been sustainable, and this is where, you know, you'll have economists and it says it doesn't matter how much we owe. And people say, oh, well, that's because they can print the dollars themselves. That's not correct. It's because other people are buying the debt. Other people are buying up the dollars. I didn't want to try to get into economics too much because I'm not an economics expert, but I have read enough people who are. And so I do kind of grasp some fundamental things. We don't print dollars. And I hate it. It's one of those things that drives me crazy whenever I hear somebody, they just keep printing more money. That's not correct. And not just in the physical sense. You know, we all know they create numbers in a computer. That's your dollar. But the way the numbers get into circulation, money is not printed into existence. It is borrowed into existence. That's why they're so desperate. They're always trying to encourage people to borrow more money. That's how the money gets into circulation. One of the reasons that their government keeps borrowing more and more and more and more money is because they're the last ones. They're the you've heard the, you know, like if somebody's desperate for cash and they go to the loan shark or the payday loan place, which is the same thing. You know, that's the lender of last resort. You down at the payday loan place, and you're pretty much at the end of the rope. You're at the lender of last resort. Well, if you flip it over on the other side, the U.S. government is the borrower of last resort because the individual American people are tapped out. I mean, they just can't borrow anymore. They probably would if they could, but they're just tapped out. They're barely scraping by. And now that's exasperated, now that everything's getting even more expensive. But so that means the government has to borrow more and more. Say, oh, okay, the government's got to get their borrowing under control. They can't. They literally cannot do that because they cannot increase the money. The money is borrowed into existence. Now, with the petrodollar status, the reserve currency status in the world, you had other nations looking to buy up the debt, buy up the bonds. And basically, they had to have the dollars. You're trading millions and millions and millions of barrels of oil. That's a whole lot of money. And it's all being conducted in dollar trade. So if you're, for instance, Saudi Arabia, you have to have a lot of dollars to do this, you know, or flip it. If you're buying a bunch of oil from Saudi Arabia, you've got to have a lot of dollars because that's all they're going to accept for their oil. And you give them the dollars. So you got to get those dollars from somewhere. You need them. That's where the economists have said, you know, it doesn't matter how much, you know, it doesn't matter how much the U.S. government borrows because other people need the money. And there's a certain amount of truth to that, but there's a limit to everything. And now, this dollar status is coming to an end, and they know this. That's the thing. They know this, and once they blow it up, they got to replace it with something else. Because you know those who are running things, they're not going to just say, "Well, that was our time to shine, time to get back to work." That's the one thing they're not going to do. So they got to find a replacement, and things can keep moving on. Of course, they will move into it first, so they're well prepared. That's where digital currency comes in. Money is just, you think about, money is just convincing people, hypnotizing people, if you would, convincing people that something has value. You know, now obviously, if you look at a dollar bill or a $5 bill or a $100 bill, you know, if you got the Benjamins, as they say on the streets, so you got a stack of Benjamins and you say, man, I got the money. I've got a stack of 5 Benjamins here. I'm doing pretty good. I might put them in my teeth and take a selfie. But it's funny to really think about what we're talking about. People kill over the Benjamins. And what are we talking about? Some pretty paper with, you know, some paper with ink printed on it. That is literally what we're talking about. I saw a story recently. One of these data mining places. You know, data mining. AI data centers. There. One of these data center places was trying to buy this old lady's farm up in Kentucky to put a data center. And they offered her like, I don't know how much acreage she had. They didn't say. But they offered her like $25 million. Some ridiculous amount for her farm. And the media people were all just shocked that she wouldn't sell it. This lady's old. She's like, what am I going to do? You know, she'd probably be like me. What am I going to do with $25 million? But they were just shocked that she wouldn't sell her farm. She was explaining, you know, the old house she lived in. She's like, you know, she's old. And she's like, I say she's old. She's probably like a little older than me. But she's like, you know, this was built by my grandfather, great-grandfather by hand. You know, my family has lived here by generations. Well, that had meaning for her. But the media people were nevertheless shocked. She got offered $25 million. They just couldn't wrap their heads around it. And I'm thinking, but think about what you're talking about. She wouldn't trade this land, the heritage of her family, a house built by her ancestors that she herself is still living in, that she hopes her heirs will live in someday. She wouldn't trade all of that for some pretty paper with ink on it. This is really, here we've got 25 million, if you think of them as $1 bills, we've got 25 million pieces of paper. What do you mean you're not going to trade your land and your heritage for the, look, we got paper. Of course, it wouldn't be paper. They're going to bring it in a suitcase. It's even worse. Listen, if you will give us this tangible thing that once it's gone, you can't get it back because we're going to bulldoze it and build a data center on it and destroy it. We'll keep tap, tap, tap. We'll put some numbers on a computer just for you. What's wrong with this lady? 25 million. 25 billion. A number on a computer. That's it. A ledger entry. If she demanded it in cash, she would get $25 million worth of pretty paper with ink on it. In exchange for her heritage, for things she could never get back, for the knowledge that she sold it and for some paper, and they came in and bulldozed her great-granddaddy's house that he built by hand. And when they moved to the digital currency, you're not even going to get the pretty paper anymore. I've said this before, and it's one of those things I just find so out in the open, and very few people are pointing it out. And that's when I say they're telegraphing the digital currency, I'm 100% convinced that's what these data centers are. They keep calling them AI data centers. It's for the AI race. AI. Like, they're building all of these massive data centers. They're going to use all this massive amount of energy and suck up a massive amount of water. For what? So that you can ask Grok if something's true? How does that make any sense? How does that make any money? You know, ask yourself that. They're spending billions and billions of dollars. These tech companies are spending billions and billions of dollars. The government's giving billions and billions of dollars to build these data centers for AI. Now, oh, this is the AI economy. We got the AI. Has anybody ever stopped to ask themselves, How are these companies going to recoup that and turn a profit with AI? You know, why are people all going to buy subscriptions to AI? I don't think so. I mean, I'm sure some will, like, you know, people that have figured out how to use AI to help their business to make a little money. Maybe they're going to. But your average American person is not going to buy a subscription to AI. They're going to use the free version no matter how shitty it is, especially now because everybody broke. Where are they going to make the money? Where is the profit? And sometimes you got to step back and think about it because it's just like people realized finally years ago, you know, they're looking at all these people who are using Facebook and there are these other social media platforms and they're like, it's great. We get to do this and we get to talk to people and post stuff up and pretend we're important and it's all free. And finally, people started realizing, well, they're not doing this for free. You're the product. They're selling your information. Most people haven't caught up to asking the question, how are they going to make money with the AI? How are they going to make money with these massive, quote unquote, AI data centers? I mean, they're spending billions and billions and billions of dollars to put in these data centers with the claim that is for AI. And again, I don't believe that. I don't think they're for AI. People say, oh, it's for surveillance. They've already got that. The NSA has that already, has had it a long time. They've countless terabytes of our information that go through there. They could go back and pull up all of this. They already have that. And what, they don't have the ability to surveil pretty much everything? Come on. We answer all of these questions with the digital currency. You know, and maybe the realization of this and the belief of this is because I have in the past, as you all well know, dealt, and most of you probably have, you know, I've dealt with cryptocurrency, with Bitcoin, the number one cryptocurrency, Bitcoin. And if you have any experience with Bitcoin, this all falls into place. See, most people don't. The average person you go to work with or church with or school with, whatever, I have no idea how Bitcoin is like magic on the computer. But if you have experience with Bitcoin, all of this makes a lot of sense. All of these questions I just presented, they're all answered. It makes sense. On these data centers, it all makes sense. People used to be arguing that, you know, Bitcoin was going to be the new dollar. You know, Bitcoin is going to be the new. This is a new alternative currency. We're free from the bonds of fiat. With the digital fiat, with Bitcoin, because it can't be inflated. Well, that's your first guess. They're never going to let that happen, but Bitcoin. And the big problem, the big hole in this idea, this whole theory, was time. And again, if you have experience with Bitcoin, if I had some Bitcoin and I send it to you or you send it to me, let's say I was taking Bitcoin. And you say, hey, I'm going to send a little fragment of Bitcoin to GPD because I love his show. And you go to you send that Bitcoin. It's going to take hours. It might even take days for it to finally come to me. Well, you know, why is that? Because it has to be mined. In other words, and mining isn't digging it up out of the ground. It's verified. So you got your strings of code. And otherwise, it could be counterfeited. You know, somebody could just send some digits and say, there's your Bitcoin. And only it's not. So it has to be verified. That's why it can't be counterfeited. It's one of the neat ideas about it. But the problem is it takes a lot of computing power. That's why it might take hours if you pay more in mining fees. Then you can send it quicker, but it's still going to take an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, whatever. Or if you want to save money and you don't pay as much mining fee, yeah, it's going to take a long time because they're not going to dedicate a lot of computing power to the mining. There's not much mining fee there, so you're at the back of the line. In fact, it may never go through until you up what you're willing to pay to have it processed. Because all of the string of code in the Bitcoin, I'm going somewhere with this, just bear with me. But all this, you got to understand the digital currency and to understand the digital currency and the point of these data centers, you got to understand Bitcoin. And most of y'all do already, but some of you may not. The code has to be verified, otherwise it's counterfeit. And that takes computing power. Now, collectively speaking, especially in comparison to the dollar, not very many people use Bitcoin or are familiar with it. And so it works in the sense of what it does. But it's slow. The big problem, the reason it was never going to become a replacement for your credit card and your wallet or your debit card or cash, was because you're not going to go to the store and buy your two bags of groceries for $150 and pay with Bitcoin. And the store is just going to roll the dice that, you know, in a day and a half when it finally finalizes, you're good to go. It's got to be instant. And there's where the data centers come in. They're going to implement digital currency. They're going to have to have, it's going to be a blockchain, obviously, and it's going to have to, like with Bitcoin, it's going to have a way to be verified so that it can't be counterfeited, simple as. And it's going to run into, thus, the same problem that you run into with Bitcoin. I don't think it's going to be Bitcoin. It's going to be something that central bank can control. But it's going to have to be verified. It's going to have to be something the central bank can control and create to infinity. Because that's the way this money scheme always works. But they're going to have a way to verify it. And you run into the same thing with the Bitcoin mining. It's got to be verified for a transaction. Well, if you're going to push digital currency onto the population, they're not going to, it's going to have to be instant. You know, people are trained to stick their debit card in the machine, and when it goes approved, they leave with the stuff because everybody knows the store is going to get paid. Even more so now, you know, they got those cards that have the little transmitter in it, and you don't even stick the card in. You walk up there and hold it up against the machine, and blip, you're good to go. Instant. That's what people are used to. That's what people are spoiled to. Hell, it's faster than pay it with cash, because you pay with cash. You know, how many of y'all like me? Like, you go into a store, like I stopped here a while back at a convenience store at Allsup's. If you're not familiar with Allsup's, I was doing a little traveling, had to take a little trip, wasn't super far, and I'm traveling, and it's about 11:30, and I see an Allsup's ahead, and I need to stop and pee, and I whip into the Allsup's, and I go and pee. And you know, if you know, you traveling, you stop at the Allsup's, what do you got to do? You got to get you two beef and bean burritos and a Dr. Pepper. And again, if you don't know, if you don't know what time it is with them Allsup's burritos, I don't know if they have them in Yankee Land. I know they ain't going to have them in Europe. It'd be made out of cabbage leaves or something. Them beef and bean burritos, that's not a soft flour tortilla like you think of a burrito. It is this deep fried American thing. It is a deep fried. It's crunchy. It is like a really, like a hard pie crust or something. It's crunchy. Like you bite into the very end of it. When you start into this bad boy and you bite into the end of it, flakes of it fly everywhere. Get all over your damn car. You have to vacuum it out later because this stuff just gets all over. What I do is I eat them while I'm driving and I collect them on my lap. And then I just sit real still. And then when I get where I'm going, I open the door and turn without twisting around too much so I can just kind of jump out. And all the Allsup's beef and bean burrito crumbs fall out on the ground. So I don't have as much. Clean out. What the hell was I talking? Oh, yeah. So I stop at Allsup's. I'm going to give me two beef and beans and a Dr. Pepper. And I don't generally drink sodas, but there's just something. If you got two beef and bean burritos, you got to have a Dr. Pepper to go with it. Anyway. And I go up there and I pay with cash. You know, it was like $6, probably $8 now. I don't know. Anyways, it's like it wasn't that much. So I'm paying with cash. And before it's done, I'm telling the register wagey how much change to give me. Because they're standing there like, it's a, you know, $6.48. And he gave me two fives. That's $10. Is it $4? No. Is it $3? Wait a minute. $6.48. And then finally they like, what, you know, $3. Okay, they got to the $3. You know, because most of the time, they punch in how much you give them, and the machine tells them how much change. Then they can whip along pretty good. Then they just... But once in a while, you get one, they screw up, and they hit the button. And you can see the look on their face when they do. You always know when they do it, because they hit the button, the little thing, ting! The drawer pops out. And you can always watch their face. Because when the drawer, ting! Like, if the drawer pops out, and they, like, all confident, and they rolling along... They remember to key it in. $10. But if they forget to key it in, or they hit too many zeros and it's wrong, so they can't go by that, pa-ting! You always see this look of gloom come over their face. You know? You can literally see the look come over their face. And they just have this like, uh-oh. 48 cents. Okay, I got to three. Finally, I'm just like 52 cents. Give me 52 cents and we're good. It's fat. But and part of that, excuse me, part of that is just because they're used to 90% of people come in there, stick the card in. Or if you got the little transmitter card, you just lay it up on the thing. Bleep, bleep, they're done. Pew, leave. The cash is slower. Anyway. The point being, and I got way off on a tangent, as I am wont to do, people are spoiled to the idea you walk up and lay the card up there, stick the card in, or whatever. And the bottom line is, you're not expecting to stand at that register longer than, say, 30 seconds max. And there's the problem with their digital currency. It runs into the same problem that Bitcoin has. It's got to be verified, otherwise it can be counterfeited. So it's going to be on a blockchain setup, similar to Bitcoin, except, again, they'll have it set up where they can create as much of it as they want. But it is going to have to be, quote unquote, mined, which, again, has more to do with verifying that it's the digital currency than actually creating the new one. Remember, whenever you hear Bitcoin and people talking about mining fees, primarily what they're talking about is the fee for the computing power necessary put in to verify that what you have is an actual fragment of Bitcoin. That's all it is. So is it going to be the same thing? So the bottom line is, if it's to implement their digital currency, it is going to have to be basically a within 30 seconds verification that what that person is spending at the point of sale is indeed legitimate digital currency. That is going to take a massive, massive, massive amount of computing power. Where's it going to come from? I hear all these people always talking about they're going to implement digital currency. Well, that's true. But then the same people will turn around and talk about the AI data centers are about watching everything we do. Well, in a sense, they're going to be watching everything you spend. If you're implementing digital currency, it is going to take a massive, just an almost unimaginable amount of computing power to verify all of these transactions within 30 seconds. It's just a massive amount. Voila. Where's that infrastructure going to be? This is there. It's right in front of us. That's why they're building them everywhere. I mean, it makes sense. I don't have to be an expert. I don't have to have inside information. I can look and say, well, they obviously need to replace the dollar with something because it's on the way out. It's obviously going to be a digital currency. And what are the problems going to be inherent with that? Because we've had Bitcoin, which is like an early version of it. Well, the problem is it takes a lot of computing power to verify each transaction. And now we're talking about everyone using it instead of a small handful of people. Wow, that's going to take a lot of computing power to verify that. Ba-dum! That's what the data centers are for. That's why they're spending all this money. That's why they don't care how much electricity, how much energy they're going to use, or how much water they're going to suck up. And that's how they're going to make money. There's the other question answered. You think they're spending billions and billions and billions of dollars to build, quote unquote, AI data centers. As I said earlier, how are they going to make money on that? Yeah, people might buy a subscription, or the government will pay them to surveil everything you do. Maybe, okay. But I say they're going to be making it hand over fist with mining fees, they're going to, with transaction fees. If every single transaction in the, when the dollar, the cash money is gone, digital currency gets rid of a credit card. Think about it. Digital currency, you don't got to worry about who's taking MasterCard or Visa or whatever. It's all on your digital currency. You say, oh, well, we'll give you this much credit on your digital currency account. Everything will be on the digital currency. And they're going to make every single transaction they're making a cutoff of. They're making a cutoff of it. That's how they're going to make their money. That's how they're going to get their money back and turn a profit from building these billions and billions and billions of dollars worth of these data centers. Simple. It's all the questions answered. It ain't for no freaking AI. That's just what they're telling them. Because if they came out and told everybody, we're building these data centers so that we can implement the digital currency and have absolute control over your life, because if you say anything we don't like, you won't just be canceled from Twitter. You'll have your digital currency shut off. You know? I mean, they debank people now. They kick them off their bank account. But at some point, the bank still has to give you a check for your amount of money. If you own the digital currency, they just cut your ass off. They said, well, you still have it. You just don't have access to it because of your anti-Semitism or lack of support for the latest war or whatever the hell the case may be. It's amazing. I was thinking the other day, you know, we talk about stuff like this. And obviously the country is becoming more and more dystopian. And the trajectory, I mean, how many people think the trajectory is good? I don't know of anybody that thinks the trajectory, no matter what age. You know, you talk to old people, they're going to be like, man, this country's gone to shit. You talk to young people, they're like, we have no future. Nobody feels like things are going in a great direction. And then you have these idiots that are up there like, we got to bless Israel and God will bless America. Well, there have been a lot of blessing. I guess blessing is defined as money. Fighting their war. I'd like to see somebody ask one of these heretics, when does the blessing part start? When they stand up there, sit up there and say, you know, like that idiot Ted Cruz sitting up there on Tucker Carlson. And, well, I believe in the Bible that God said those that bless Israel, he will bless. And I want America to be blessed. And, of course, Tucker Carlson called him out on it and made him look like an idiot. But I would have loved to see somebody at one point in time ask one of these people, so what is the blessing? When does it start? Because everybody in the world, damn sure everybody in the country, is looking around and everything is going to hell in a handbasket. When does the blessing start, bro? Is like God waiting on something? Have we not blessed them enough? How much is enough? Where's the ledger sheet that when we get to a blessing of this level, God's just going to pour the bountiful basket out on us? Where is it? When does the blessing start? Because we're seeing everything is pointing towards a curse, not a blessing. So you may be wrong. You know, is the check in the mail? What is God waiting on? Because we are waiting on the blessing part. Y'all keep saying, we got to bless Israel, so we'll be blessed. When the hell is the blessing part start? Because it seemed to be running a little behind schedule. I've said for a while, I said, I'm sorry. I pray to the Lord a lot. I seek the Lord virtually every day. And I'm just saying, and I'm not a prophet, but I'm just saying, I get this more of a judging against vibe here, you know? I'm getting more of a getting lined up for the, I don't know, wrath poured out role. You know, people always reading Revelation and trying to decipher it, you know, and I always tell people don't do that. You know, because they always, like, I was a kid and people were reading Revelation, they were, oh, this is the Soviet Union. That didn't age well. I always tell people don't get into all that. But if I did, follow it up. If I did, that whore on that beast, that the beast turns around and kills, you know, because they hate the beast, even though they're working together. The whore on the beast. If I had to say that, if I was going to play that game, and I'm not, but I'm saying if I did, that would be the U.S. The U.S. is the U.S. is the whore on the beast, the woman on the beast. That even though they're working together, the beast actually hates her, and they wind up killing. Yeah, that would be the Anyway, just try and talk there and untangle my power cord because, you know, my laptop is getting old. And so the battery, you know, I could sit here and blow through a show and halfway through the post work, you know, post recording work before I had to plug it in. And now I can't even get through, a show without plugging it in because the battery just can't do it. It's starting to get some age just like me. It can't. Let's see here. What do we got? Oh, well, one thing I find amazing here, and I'm going to use some stuff here as an example, and I'm not going to post up a link because I'm just reading some little snippets here. I got to bring up this war stuff because it's a happening. We're in the middle of an event, and we look back at COVID. That was an event. This is an event. 9/11 was an event. You get these turning point events. You get these events going. These happenings, if you would. This is a happening. We're in an event. You know, we don't know how it's going to turn out. But there's always interesting things to observe and learn from these events. One of the things I observe, you know, because the U.S. is fumbling around. This from RT does this thing, and I haven't used RT in a while because back when the Biden administration was in there and it looked like they, you know, things kept getting hotter and hotter with Russia. And I'm like, you know, if they go full hot with Russia, I don't want to have old shows floating out there using RT and they'd be coming back saying, you know, oh, you're working for an enemy nation or something. But that part's kind of cooled down a little bit. But anyway, I just want to read some snippet out of here because it's just an example. You know, President Donald Trump says, because they do this whole section where they're running constant updates on this, but it says, President Donald Trump says Iran has been decimated or is being decimated while his envoy is hopeful for talks this week. And then the very next paragraph starts with Iran's latest retaliatory strikes on U.S. and Israel facilities in the region reportedly injured at least 29 troops. While President Donald Trump claims that Iran has been decimated and has no capacity to fight back. They have no capacity to fight back, but the latest missile strikes and they're scrambling around trying to. And the reason I bring this up isn't to try to get into, here's the latest update on the war, because some of y'all are probably tired of that. It's to point out, you know, because you show a lot of people talking about how the U.S. has no plan here and how they're fumbling this around. But one of the aspects of this that I find very relevant, you know, as far as surprise action from the Iranians, you know, is the inability of liars to basically, they go into an error code when it comes to people actually doing what they say they're going to do. Now, don't get me wrong, in any conflict, I'm not, you get people and they pick a side, you know, especially Americans, everything's a sports game and they pick a team and that's who they're cheering for. You know, when you have a conflict like that, both sides lie. I mean, they do. They both lie. They're all going to claim that, you know, the missile landed in a field and nothing happened and nobody was injured and the other side can't do anything right and all that sort of stuff. But the reality, the reality is always going to be something. They all lie about their casualties and stuff like that. But Iran, everything they've said they're going to do, they're going to do. Before this even started, they said, if you do this, we're going to close Strait of Hormuz. We're going to hit these different targets. Israel is going to get pummeled to oblivion. And the U.S. does their thing anyway. And then the Iranians turn around and do exactly what they say. And when I read this little update snippet this morning and Donald Trump claiming there, you know, for the umpteenth time, basically, that the U.S. has won and Iran is totally decimated and has no way to fight back. And then in the next breath, he's desperately trying to get talks going, which Israel is going to torpedo if they do get off the ground. And then here's the latest update on all the strikes of Iranian missiles when they've been decimated. You know, hell, 2 or 3 weeks ago, they were saying that all of their missiles have been destroyed and they're still launching them. And it highlighted to me how liars do so poorly. This is why the truth is powerful on every level for you too in your personal life. Because when you run into a liar, they don't know how to deal with the truth. You know, I always say people project themselves, their own behaviors, their own values or lack thereof onto everyone else. A thief is always going to assume everyone's trying to steal from him. Because he's a thief at heart. A liar is no different. A liar assumes everybody else is lying. A bullshitter assumes everybody else is just bullshitting. So you have Donald Trump, which is like the pinnacle of bullshitters. And so every time the Iranians say, well, if you do this, we're going to do this, he doesn't believe it because he says stuff all the time that's just bullshit. Pardon my French, as they say. But he doesn't believe it. Not just because, you know, people are like, oh, because he's stupid. No, because he's a liar. So he doesn't understand when he runs into people who are telling. And again, I'm not trying to paint the Iranians as angels or you know, not trying to rah-rah. I'm just looking at the truth. And the truth is, for the most part, every time they have said, if you do this, we'll do this. And they have followed through and actually done what they say they're going to do. You know, somebody told me recently, I was having a discussion with somebody and they said, you know, they laughed and said, you know, it's pretty bad that we're at this point where we all find the Iranians are more believable than Trump. You know, and this, you know, this is from a normal Trump voting person. And this is where we're at. See, a liar, the truth has power because a liar doesn't know how to deal with it. That makes sense. A liar doesn't know how to deal with you. When you're dealing with one of these liars, because they want to make you think, you know, oh, you're a truth teller. Oh, you're just going to get run around in circles by the liar. No, that's not the case. That's them trying to convince you they have power over you. The truth is actually the opposite. The liar has no idea how to deal with the truth. They don't. It's example right here on a mega scale. Iran keeps telling them, if you do this, we will do that. And then he does it anyway because he assumes they're like him. They're just bullshitting. And then they turn around and actually do it. And he doesn't know how to deal with it. He doesn't understand it. He just has to assume they're like him. And people in your life are like that too. If you run into a perpetual bullshitter, a perpetual liar, and you're just a truth teller, you're just staying with the truth, they ain't gonna know how to deal with you. They don't. And they try to run around. They'll cast their word spells on you and whip out your emotional phrases, you know, and try to bedazzle you. You know, they're going to try to bedazzle you and make you get you emotional and get you turned around because they're trying to get you off the truth. But you don't have to do that. Oh, if the truth is the truth, you just stick with that and watch them dance around, run around circles, you know, run around in circles, trying to get you over here, trying to get you distracted, trying to get you off topic. You see, they're the ones that have to do the dance. They're the ones that got to run around. They're the ones that got to try to keep up. Think about how hard that is. They got to keep up because everything that comes out of their filthy mouths is a lie. Like their whole life. Imagine you're the age you are today. They, you know, for some of us, it's a lot more years behind us than are ahead of us. Imagine your entire life behind you, however many years you got behind you, and you've spent those years lying. And you've got to keep on some level or another, depending how far back these lies go, you've got to keep up with all of that. So the next filthy lie that comes out of your mouth doesn't run in obvious contradiction to one of your previous lies, you know, and who, depending on who you're talking to, you got to keep up with, okay, what lies have I told this person? What lies have I told this person? And the lie that's fixing to come out of my mouth, is it going to run counter to one of the lies I've told this person? I would run counter to this. Well, I don't think I told this person that, so I don't have to worry about that. And you have to keep up with it. It drives me crazy. But when you truth, you just the truth. It is what it is. You know, people try to say, oh, the truth, it's my truth. Yeah. I don't know, you're dealing with somebody that has like no spiritual foundation, although use terms like, this is my truth. This is my truth of my being. Look, there is no my truth. There is the truth. It is objective reality. It is what it is. And it is personified in Jesus Christ, by the way. He's the way, the truth, and the life. So it is actually personified in one man that has walked the earth. It is objective. It is reality. It is a thing. It is concrete. It's not different for me and different for you. We can have different experiences. Yes. Your experiences do not make the objective truth. Does that make sense? You have a different experience than me. That doesn't mean you have a different truth from me, because the truth is reality. It is a thing. It's either true or it's not. A liar has no idea how to deal with truth teller, because they're slinging all this stuff. They are slinging it. And you're just looking at them like, what all are you going on about? And the whole time they're slinging, they're trying not to contradict their other lies. You know, when you're telling the truth, you don't have to keep up. You know, like you're talking to somebody, you don't have to, before you speak the truth, you have to stop and think, oh my gosh, what did I tell this guy last week? You know, imagine that, you know. We take it for granted, because I assume the vast majority of y'all are not bullshitters. You, the truth means something to you. We all fall short, obviously. You know, none of us are claiming to be perfect here. But I believe the truth matters to virtually all of you that are listening to the show. And we take it for granted. We take it for granted the fact that, you know, when you're talking to somebody at your job or a family member or whoever, you take it for granted that you don't have to sit there before you tell them something. You don't have to sit there and stop. Wait a minute. What did I tell them last week? Wait, what did I tell them last month? Is what I'm fixing to tell them going to run counter to that? And they're going to say, hey, that's not what you said before. We just take it for granted because we're telling them the truth. It just comes natural. You know, again, we all fall short at times, you know, and we're ashamed of that. The liar speaks the language of his father, the devil. What did Jesus tell us? The devil is the father of lies. So when you deal with a habitual liar, whose language is he speaking? There is no truth in him. There's no truth in the devil. When you run into a habitual liar, he's speaking. I don't care if he goes to church. I don't care if they make a show and have him taking pictures of him walking in and out of church. And the guy says, oh, I'm a Christian believer. Let me get all these heretics standing around me for a photo op praying over me. If he's a habitual liar, he's speaking the language of the devil. Jesus Christ said so. I don't care how many heretic TV preacher assholes you get standing up there making a show of laying hands on you and praying that God will get the hell out of here with that. You speak in the language of the devil. You know, I ain't talking about, oh, you know, yesterday I came up short here and said something not entirely correct. I'm talking about everything comes out of the man's mouth is a lie. Yeah, that's you're speaking. If that's the way of life, you're speaking the language of the devil. You ain't got to be a Pharisee walking around in front of Jesus. You're doing the same thing. You might as well be laying hands on Satan, praying that God will bless him. At least spiritually speaking, those people's hands are going to rot off doing something like that. A liar don't know how to deal with it. We take it for granted. We don't have to worry about, you know, if we do contradict ourselves, somebody say, hey, you know, 6 months ago, you said this. You know, well, you can say, you know, and there's always an answer for that, isn't there? Yeah, that's because at that time I didn't know. We don't always, most time we don't have all the information. We can talk like we do because we think we do, but later on we get new information. Somebody says, hey, that ain't what you said before. Yeah, that's because I didn't know before. A lot of Trump people, a lot of people that voted for Trump, they feeling that right now. You know? Oh, yeah, you said Trump was going to make America great again. We all need to go out here and vote for Trump. And now you're saying that he a liar. And of course, I never said that, but I'm just saying this is what somebody might say. And the person's proper response here, don't make excuses. This is you. Don't make excuses. Just be honest. Just say, yeah, at that time, I thought maybe, just maybe, I held out hope that this guy really was. And honestly, compared to Kamala, he seemed to be the better choice. But I was wrong. Obviously, from facts, I was wrong. Don't defend. There's a difference between a lie and just being wrong. I think that's something else important to keep in mind. You know, if you, in good intentions, and you tell somebody something to the best of your ability, because you think it's true, but you just happen to be wrong, don't be embarrassed about it. Just say, I was wrong. You know, feel free to explain. I said that because this is what, you know, this is the information I had. This is what I thought. Or I thought this guy was the best shot we had at the time. You know, maybe we could vote one more time and it would make a difference. And it didn't. I was wrong. There's a difference from just being wrong and being a liar. You know, when Trump stood up there and told everybody he was ending all the foreign wars and no more wars in the Middle East, he was lying because he was taking that Adelson money. He was taking all that AIPAC money. He taking all that. He's taking all of that money. He knew who his bosses were. He knew he had to make a deal to get in there. And he knew who he was making a deal with. And he knew what it was going to cost. He just lied. It wasn't incorrect. He just lied. There's the difference. Now, talking about, you know, speaking the language of the devil and things like that. You know, there's a lot of stuff that goes on. I sometimes read or I'll watch videos of people talking about various things. You know. And you see this term thrown about a lot, you know. The powers that be, you know, the powers that be. And who is this? Who are these powers that be? Now, at one point in time, I kind of thought, you know, basically they didn't want to say the Jews, so they said the powers that be. You know, which is fine. You know, you got a YouTube channel and you don't want it canceled. And, you know, if you say the Jews, you're going to get canceled. You say the powers of B. So, but who are the powers of B? But as I have thought about that, that's not correct. It's not. So this may be jot down here on my pad. Who are these powers of B? Because if you just simply say the Jews, I don't think that's correct. I don't think that's necessarily correct. This is where it comes in very important, and I've said this a long time, to understand the spiritual nature of what you're watching in the world. I've said this for years. I will say it again. You know, if you style, people will say something like, you know, normies don't understand the JQ. And until you understand the JQ, you're not going to understand what's happening in this world. And I say, if your understanding stops at the JQ, you're never going to fully understand. I'm not saying it doesn't have a place, But I'm saying if you stop there, things aren't going to make sense to you because it's there's another layer. You can sit here and say, I don't care. But I'm just telling you, if you don't understand the spiritual nature and watching and listening to people that talk about the powers that be in the context in which they talk about it, really, I think it highlights to me, you know, because you get into this thing of people talk about all of these are scripted events. These are scripted events. And at the very beginning of the show, I was talking about this. We're in a happening. We're in an event here. And people will say this is a scripted event. And they'll point to something like The Economist magazine. They come out with a cover, you know, at the beginning of the year, the cover for 2026. And it'll have all this random imagery on it. And it basically is like a satanic prophecy. It has all of these things that at the end of the year, people go back and look at the cover. And it's like, well, it's like they're laying out what's going to happen. And people will point this out and say, these are all of this is scripted. The powers that be have scripted these events. It's a stage and they're playing out these events. It's all planned. Planned by who? Who are these mysterious powers that be? The level, because they're not incorrect. You know, you see a lot of predictive programming. You see these things or they look like they're prophecy because, again, everything the devil does is like a cheap Timu, worse than a Timu knockoff of the real thing. You know, because the Timu version might function. The devil stuff is a cheap copy that he has to manipulate things around to look like that's what's happening. Yep. But a certain amount of this stuff comes true. So who's coordinating? Everything is scripted. Okay. Who's writing the script? Because there's a level of coordination across many countries, many governments that is necessary that it for the only way that happened is there has to be somebody with power and authority over all of these various governments with a final say so. Makes sense? Who is it? Who has that final say so? Well, in the Bible, we understand that when Jesus was tempted, when the devil showed up in the desert to try to tempt Jesus, he offered him all the kingdoms of the world. Okay, so we know right there, because Jesus didn't say you're wrong. So we know right there, there's somebody who has ultimate authority over all the kingdoms of the world. And it's the devil. You look at the vast amount of coordination that has to happen over that has happened over years and years and years and years over governments, over governments, over governments, over governments. That's not possible with just people. That's why I say it's the Jews. They can't. I'm sorry, they can't. You know, because they're going to be individual people that are going to have a different idea. It's too hard to coordinate. Like you create this. How do I want to put it? I see people, they'll tend to overinflate they almost deify these people. You know, they almost deify the Jews like they're omnipotent. You know, you listen to some of these people and when they're done, I feel like saying, so what you're saying is basically they are some kind of chosen people because it seems like they're capable of anything. They're not. They're not. I'm not saying they have no role in any of this stuff. But I'm saying when you look at trajectories of things, like for instance, last week on this very show, I was talking about technology in the end days and the fact that all of a sudden, all this technology sprung up out of nowhere. You know, it had to be introduced from the outside. Where did all this sudden burst of technological advancement come from? It's not because people suddenly woke up one day and got smarter. It came from somewhere. It didn't come from the Jews. This stuff had to be put in place for the next step, for all of these events that come to pass. You have to have the technology. You couldn't be having conflicts on a global scale like we are if everybody's still riding around on horses carrying spears and shooting bows and arrows or whatever the hell. You know, coordination over centuries, coordination over years and years, coordination that happens, scripted events that happen over multiple governments with multiple leaderships that have multiple agendas. I'm sorry, the Jews can't do that. They just can't. I'm not going to turn these people into like quasi-gods on the planet or something. You know, I mean, they can't do that. I'm sorry. You know, I hope you understand what I'm saying. You know, they're not capable of that. They're just not. They're not gods. I mean, you know, they have their own agenda and they have their own, you know, tribalism or whatever that they do. But they're not capable of the things at scale that we're talking about here. They're not. This is why I say you're never going to truly understand what's going on. There's layers on this onion, and unless you understand the spiritual aspect of everything you're looking at in this world, you're never going to really start wrapping your head around the scale of what we're talking about. The very fundamental nature of the battle, you know, of the conflict that we're seeing. You know, it'd be like if you were in Iran right now, or Israel for that matter, and you didn't understand the aspect of the conflict at this time, at least, is centered around missiles dropping on people. And so you're out there just walking around in the city because you don't understand that the nature of this conflict is missiles. You're like, well, I don't see any foreign soldiers on our streets, so I'm going to walk down here. I'm going to walk down here to the bagel shop. You're going to get a missile dropped on you. All the other Israelis are in the bunker. They're tired of being in the bunker. They're fatigued from being in the bunker. And they're like, you better get in the bunker. And you're like, why? There's no enemy soldiers out here. It's fine. And you're walking down to the bagel shop, which has already been blown up, and you get a missile dropped on you. That's why you got to understand the nature of the conflict. They're in the bunkers because they understand. It's a missile conflict, a drone conflict. It ain't a conflict, at least at this time, of enemy soldiers on your streets looking to shoot you. This is a conflict of missiles dropping on you. You got to understand that. That's why you're in the bunker. Spiritually speaking, you got to understand this is the spiritual nature of the conflict. So you ain't just walking around in the street like an idiot getting a missile dropped on you, so as to speak. So as you're not getting a spiritual missile dropped on you, got to understand the nature of the conflict. I got a lot more I wanted to get into. We're out of time. We'll probably get into the rest of it. I wanted to get into, as believers, not letting them have power over, you know, we'll get into it. Heck, we do this every week. I'm sure we'll get back around to it. We'll no doubt have plenty to go on about. So I'm going to go ahead and wrap it up on that note. And again, just to highlight, you got to understand the nature of what kind of conflict you're in. You know, and if you don't grasp the spiritual nature, you get tired. Look at it. People, it's, to me, it's an inarguable point. Who are the powers that be? What do they do? How are they able to, quote unquote, script events? Who's capable of that? What scale of control is necessary for that to take place? Ask yourself these questions. I'm not telling anybody to take my word for it. I'm just person. I can get stuff wrong. I have. Trust me. I got a lot of experience of getting stuff wrong. But ask yourself these questions and what's the most likely answer? You know. But anyway, yeah, it is important to understand the fundamental nature of the conflict. So anyway, we're going to wrap it up on that note. Appreciate you sticking with me for the full hour, and we're about 4 minutes now. So I do appreciate it. I hope you enjoy the rest of your week. And as always, hope to see you back here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.